The following program is pre-recorded. Hello, everyone. This is Jerry Pippin, and welcome to our UFO show.
Something intelligent, then don't buy the Inquirer. We don't need you. Then you buy the New York Review of Literature, you buy the Partisan Review, you buy the Harper's, you buy Atlantic, the National Enquirer, UFO sightings. That's the caliber, right? UFO sightings and never by anybody intelligent. Have you noticed that? A UFO has never landed at Harvard or Yale or Princeton. And a source has never landed on a Jewish lawn because we would turn it over to see who made it. Oh.
That was Joan Rivers, and now we do know, actually, why the UFOs never land anywhere but out in the deserts of New Mexico and Nevada. It's because, evidently, UFOs are monitoring what we've been doing with nuclear power since 1945, maybe a little earlier even. For instance, the story we have been doing on the UFO crash of 1945 and what happened within a month of the atomic bomb test there at the White Sands Proving Grounds, shortly before we dropped the bomb on Japan. We have two witnesses who are still alive, and they were there for the incident, Jose Padilla and Remy Baca. They were childhood friends. They witnessed the UFO crash together, and they even were able to hide a piece of the UFO from everyone. Both of them left their home in San Antonio, New Mexico, and moved out to the West Coast in the mid-50s. In other words, they didn't see each other for several decades, but suddenly, by a quirk of fate and the Internet, they were able to find each other again because Remy Baca was doing some genealogy research and ran across Jose. When they witnessed the UFO accident, Remy was only 7 and Jose was 9. San Antonio only had about 60 people as a population. So in those days, everybody knew everybody. The incident that we've done on our show with Paula Harris actually happened on August 16, 1945. The two young boys were on horseback looking for a very special cow with calves, and they were supposed to check it out and then go home and tell Jose's father whether the cow was okay or not. But they were out there, and a very heavy thunderstorm came up. And while they were underneath a ledge, they heard a tremendous roar and a crash. It happened over the next hill from them. When they got over there, they saw a big hole in a craft and three creatures. They looked like they were ants, but they were standing straight up, according to the two boys. They were moving around in the craft, and they were squealing with pain. Listen to how both Remy and Jose describe it.
That noise that they were making, like I told Remy, you know, they're injured. They were making a noise like a jackrabbit when he's injured. Yeah.
Yeah, a real high squeaky sound.
They were afraid to get too close to the object, and when it started getting dark, they decided to get back on their horses and go home. They told Jose's father about it, and he said they would go back out there and check out the situation in a day or two. But back to the creatures and whether or not they were injured. Listen to Jose and Remy kind of flush this out.
Well, you can tell because we, you know, it was really weird. I had never been to a movie, or of course TV wasn't around, and neither had Jose, I think, or maybe he had. But in any event, we heard these sounds that would come into your head, real high pitched, you know, almost hurts your ears, you know. Then there was these images that were coming, you know, through our minds, as such. And you got you kind of like when you're in a funeral, you know, little kid at the funeral, you really feel sad for the person that passed. Well, that's the kind of feelings that we were getting from them. And you were getting the feeling that they were hurt as such. And so that was why the concern of trying to, you know, maybe, you know, going in there. Jose wanted to go in there and, you know, and see what was going on as such. Am I right, Jose?
That's right.
Okay.
He stopped me from it.
Had an interesting phone call this week. In fact, late last night in the office, I was up recording some things at the studio and answered the phone, and the guy came on and he said, I'm from New Mexico, and there's no way that San Antonio, New Mexico, can be that close to White Sands. He says it's 4 or 5 hours away. And actually, San Antonio is only 10 or 11 miles from Socorro. It's 87 miles from Albuquerque. And the thing that we need to make clear here is that the White Sands Missile Range, that's what we're talking about, not the the base itself or the city of White Sands, but the missile range stretches a little over 100 miles and gets within about 20 miles, or maybe a little less, of where the Jose Padilla Ranch was. In fact, I think the Padilla Ranch is still there. And so that's how we explain this. And that was one of the first things that got my attention, too, by the way. As long as we're explaining things, let's talk a little bit about a show we did about Fort Benning and what in the world's happening at Fort Benning, in which it appeared that perhaps there were ET invasions of troops. And we wondered at the time whether it was really real or was it MK Ultra, you know, mind control. Remember we had the two wives of the two sergeants that went up to the hill and they never responded to us again? Well, they still haven't. Other than we got a cryptic note from them that they were fine and they were afraid to talk. Now, what they were afraid of, we don't know. Whether it was afraid of the authorities, of the officials at Fort Benning, or something supernatural. We just don't know. And so we apologize. We've been trying to close this and put a little closure on this story. We can't do it. But that's not new. We did another story back in 2002 when I was at KBIX Radio, my old hometown station. And we were on the Internet as well, even then, streaming. But we did a show about Fort Benning and an ET invasion. Actually, this fellow was attacked. We did a little checking on him, Ted Steenbergen, or I'm sorry, Ted Steenworth. And Steenworth actually had lots of problems, lots of emotional problems for years after that. Had some sad news. I think his wife passed away in 2009. But Ted's still alive, and he's living back in Georgia. Went up to Fort Drum, New York for a little while, I think, but he's back in Georgia now. And I want to play this interview that we did at KBIX. We found it's kind of a lost tape. We don't have the complete interview, but we have about 16, 17 minutes here, and it's riveting. Listen to this story that Ted Steenworth tells about him being on guard duty at Fort Benning, Georgia, in a remote part of the post. And we picked this recording up with Ted talking about three hunters come out of the woods scared, white as a ghost. Listen carefully.
Because when I was out there guarding this area, I had 5 mile perimeter to guard. And
when you say I had a 5 mile perimeter, you alone or were there others?
Me alone.
So you had to march 5 miles?
Yep, I had to walk 5 mile perimeter. Another guy had 5 mile perimeter. Another guy had 5 mile perimeter. So
did you have any means of communication in case you saw something?
Oh yeah, pack radio.
Okay.
And while I was out there, I was walking around. I come around, and there was like two outhouses in the area I was guarding. I heard noises out in the wood, like, you know, the bushes move, you know, bushes moving and voices. So I crouched down behind the outhouses. And these three civilians came running out of the woods. I jumped out, told them to stop, you know, I yelled halt. all shoot, like I was supposed to. We had orders to shoot to kill everything or anything that moved. Well, the one guy had a shotgun, and the other two standing on either side of him were really scared. You know, they were yelling, they got our buddy, we got to get out of here, let's run. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? What's going on? You know, you guys aren't, nobody's supposed to be out here. Our orders were that this area was supposed to be sealed off. So there wasn't supposed to be any civilians or any planes flying over or anything like that. And if anything showed up, we were supposed to shoot it. And we all had live ammo. What we would do is, in cases like that, when we went out, we'd go into our ammo, we take one out, load it, shoot at a tree, make sure it's live. If it's live, then we know we're out on doing something real. Well, they started talking to me, telling me that, you know, their buddy was captured, and I was like, captured. And I started to notice this thing off to the side of me, this light. Now, I'm trying to keep an eye on them, because this guy's got
shot. What time of day or night is this?
This was, I didn't have a watch, so I don't know. It was late, it was dark.
Would you think it's close to midnight, or?
Close to about 11, 12.
Yeah, somewhere along in there. Okay. I mean, deep in the heart of the night, then, in other words. All of a sudden, you see the bushes rushing out. Here comes three guys in civvies.
Mm-hmm.
What do they have on, jeans or something?
Jeans, you know, like flannel shirts. They were hunting.
Uh-huh. Okay, you saw this light, you said?
Yes. I saw this light. I was, trying to keep my eye on them because the guy's got a shotgun. I don't want to take my eye off him. I have my M16 trained on him, so I'm trying to catch what it is out of the corner of my eye. When I caught this thing. It looked just like what everybody describes as an alien, and he was floating a few feet off. There were bleachers there. He was floating a few feet off the top bleacher. I'm staring at it. I'm trying to keep an eye on these guys at the same time, thinking to myself, what the hell? I'm looking, thinking to myself, this is a hologram, this is a joke, these guys are trying to pull a fast one on me.
Yeah, in other words, you're still in that training the mode. You're thinking
exactly.
That...
Mm-hmm. It looked like a hologram. It did not look real, because it had a weird glow about it. And it was floating around, and it was moving like a rubbery, rubbery type of movement.
Like kind of drifting or shimmering in the wind.
Exactly.
Like you say, like the Batman light, that goes up against the clouds. In other words, it wasn't quite real.
Exactly. What got me was I'm talking to them, they're saying shoot it, and I'm saying I ain't gonna shoot it. It's not even real. It's a hologram. So I'm looking at it, and I'm trying to communicate to it. It won't. I'm not sensing any communication coming back at me.
What were you saying, howdy or halt or what were you doing? Do you remember?
I was asking, well, what are you? Who are you? What, mm-hmm. What do you want? I didn't get no answer back. So I'm standing there, and next thing I know, the thing's face to face with me. It was like in an instant. We're locked eye to eye, and I'm looking at it, and that's when I realized, and I started shaking, that this thing's real. And then next thing I know, it's back at the top of the bleacher looking at me.
Kind of like, for lack of a better term, I guess, somewhat like they do on these music videos now. Zoom, it's there, and bang, it's back out there. Zoom, it's here, and it was there, right?
Exactly.
Just like that.
Exactly, and it was pretty scary, because I was like, whoa. They're yelling to shoot it, and I'm yelling, I'm not going to shoot it. It's not doing nothing wrong. I'm still trying to communicate with this thing and get it to communicate back to me. I'm telling you, I don't want to hurt you, but if you don't do something here, I got to do something back. It darted back at me, then back up to the bleachers. And then when it darted at me the third time, I just had this really scary feeling it was going to hurt me. And it darted back to the bleachers, and that's when I shot at it. And it moved so quick, I missed it. I stepped back thinking to myself, oh, no. I just, out of nowhere, I just put it up, put my M16 up, took off another shot, and it hit it right between the eyes. and things. I never heard a scream like that before. It wailed and just hit the ground behind the bleachers. And the three civilians started yelling and screaming, "We gotta run, we gotta run, there's gonna be more." I was like, I couldn't run. Because, you know, that's my post, I'm supposed to stay there. I was dedicated.
Now, when this thing wailed, when you hit it, it was a scream of pain, only it was ungodly or something, and it was just one scream and then it was silent, or did it moan when it hit the ground?
It was just one scream, and then it was silent, and then it hit the ground.
Wow.
I watched the back of its head come off. It just... And that's... I never heard a scream like that before. It went right through me, and I mean, I was shaking. I told them, if you guys want to run, go ahead, run. You know, I can't go. I got to stay here, you know. I'll just call it in, they'll come out. This is my thinking. So I go behind the bleachers, and it's still got that glow. You can see the glow off into the, you know, the weeds. So I'm going into the weeds, and I get to go. I'm getting closer and closer, and I catch out of the other corner of my eye now these three things coming at me. So I think it's the civilians. And I go to them, "Oh, I thought you guys were going to run." And the next thing I know, I catch what it is. It's three aliens coming, and they're grabbing me. And next thing I know, I'm up off the ground. I'm being floated towards this light that was almost blinding.
When they jerked you up, could you feel any strength from them, like hands around you, or can you even recall that? I mean, that's got to be pretty scary.
It was pretty scary, but at the same time, for some reason, all of a sudden, I wasn't afraid. I couldn't feel their hands, but I know they were carrying me because I remember them grabbing me, and I was up in the air. I'm going towards the light. I'm not worried, but...
Had you dropped your weapon by this time?
I can't remember that part.
Okay.
I had a pack radio on me. I know it was on my back. It was taking me towards the light. I know I had my M... I'm pretty sure I had my M16 in my hands. And as I'm coming towards the light, I'm starting to hear this really soft voice telling me to lay down. Saying, "Lay down, don't worry." And I was like, "No, I can't lay down. I got my M16 pack radio on my back. I won't be able to get back up." And then I was blanked out after that.
This was a voice inside your head, or literally that you heard a voice?
It was like it was inside my head.
Mm-hmm. Was it a male or a female voice?
It was a male voice. It was soft, but it was...
Kind of like maybe that computer on that movie HAL, you know what I'm talking about, the male voice that says, "And now things will be all right."
Yes, that wasn't you, was it?
Yeah.
It was almost it.
"Just lay down your weapon." Yeah. Okay, I understand, without emotion.
Yes. It was a lot, but the thing was, I was no longer scared. I wasn't worried, but I just... thought that because my pack radio on my back and the M16, I wouldn't get back up. That was the only thing I was worried about at that time. Then, after that, the only thing I remembered at the time was I was on the ground, I was getting up, and this light was so blinding, and then it just started disappearing through the trees. I got up, and I had this stuff I thought was water at first. I was trying to get it off, rub it off me, but it was like... it felt like water, looked like water, but when I rubbed it, it was like goo. It wasn't sticky or anything. It was just watery. It was thick water.
So probably this rubbed off from the space guys.
I have no idea.
I mean, I've had many people on my show over the years, and some of them say there's kind of a mucus-type substance that is left behind after they're touched.
I was covered from head to toe.
All of you, huh?
Yes.
With a slime.
Mm-hmm.
Or is that too much of a word? Maybe it was somewhere in between slime and just moisture.
Yes, because it wasn't... it was weird. It wasn't globbing. It wasn't a substance that was sticky or anything. It was just... when you rubbed it off, it became more than it was on your body. I'd be rubbing it off down my arm, and it'd be piling up, and then it would just disappear. It just started disappearing off me. Then next thing I know, it was dry. But after that, when I was finally dry, which I don't know how that happened, because I could have sworn I was wet, I started puking, I started urinating and shitting. I couldn't stop. I was out there, I was sick, crawling around, puking.
So in other words, you had no bodily function control all of a sudden, and you were sick, and you were just grotesquely sick.
Yeah, exactly. And I wouldn't stop. And then when it did stop, I went over to my pack radio, which was no longer on my back. It was sitting there. I was like, oh. But I was in a daze. I couldn't remember what happened between anything. I just remember coming up off the ground at the time, and that light. And when I went to grab my pack radio and start, talking into it, I wasn't getting nothing. It wasn't working. I checked it. I checked to see if the batteries were still in it. There were batteries in it. I took them out, rearranged them. I took it apart, looked at it, to see if any wires were broken. Nothing was broken. Put it all back together. I tried again. It still didn't work. And I was getting this. I was getting this weird feeling that something was going to happen.
Now, as far as you could tell, at that moment, you were alone again?
Yes.
Okay, we're talking with Ted Steenworth, folks. And this incident happened at what we believe is Fort Benning, Georgia. They took you out in the middle of nowhere, and it's an intriguing story. You had a feeling, a sneaking hunch, something else was going to come together here, huh?
That's what I was thinking. All that time was messing with the radio, trying to get it to work. I kept thinking there was something that was going to happen over by the outhouses that were still there. So I went over to the outhouses. I'm looking around. I don't see nothing. I'm looking in the bushes. I don't see nothing. As I'm looking in the bushes, my radio comes on, and they're yelling, "Bravo, Bravo, are you there? Bravo, are you there?" Because that's where I was. Bravo. I was with Bravo Company. And I went over to the radio, and I started yelling at the guy, "What the heck? What's going on here? What just happened?" And the guy yells back, "What do you mean, Bravo?" I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Where are you?" I said, "Well, I'm where you left me." He goes, "You're not where we left you. For one, you've been missing for 5 hours. We've been out there looking for you." And I was like, "What? Get along. You ain't been looking for me. I'm right here." I was disoriented. I thought I was there all the time. So they finally found me, took me back to the barracks. When I got back to the barracks, went upstairs, went to sleep, and when they came to wake me up to go back out on guard duty, I wouldn't get up. The sergeant started yelling at me, and all I remember is I couldn't move, I couldn't talk, I was shaking. The sergeant thought I was playing with myself. He goes, "Quit playing with yourself," and he ripped the blankets off me. And he started screaming for the medics. And I didn't understand why. When the medics came up, they looked at me, and they just grabbed the stretcher, threw me on a stretcher. He was calling on a radio. They pulled up with one of those, looked like a golf cart with a long bed on the back of it. They put me on, while I was on the stretcher and me onto the back of it, and I asked where I was going. They said, "We're taking you to the chopper that's waiting to take you to the hospital. You're in really bad shape. Look at you." I can't see myself. And that was it. I passed out from there. And I don't remember getting to the chopper. I don't remember the chopper taking me to the hospital. All I know is I came to at the hospital to the chaplain giving me my last rites. And when I opened my eyes, in the middle of him giving me my last rites, he slammed the book shut, looked at me in a daze. Him and the orderly that was standing there, he looked at the orderly, looked at me, looked back at the orderly, and said, "Hurry, get the doctor, quick, he's back." And then he looked at me again, and the chaplain looked back at the orderly and said, "Oh, I mean, you know what I mean, just hurry up, go get the doctor." I looked, I was laying down on the bed by a window in the hospital. When I looked, that was on my right, the window. When I looked to my left, there were other beds with other people in them, and they were in prone positions, looking up at the ceiling with their eyes closed. I asked them what's going on. I said, "Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it." The doctor came back. The orderly came back with the doctor. The doctor just said, "Oh, are you okay? How you feel? This and that." I said, "Okay, why? What's going on?" And they wouldn't tell me. He said, well, you got to go in and take a shower and get, you know, get out of that gown. You've been sick. You've been sweaty and all that. I was like, okay. I went into the, I walked by the beds looking at these guys. And they didn't look lively. They were laying there prone, staring at, you know, with their eyes shut, face towards the ceiling.
So some sort of makeshift morgue, I guess.
That's what I realized later. Because when I was in the bathroom, the orderly came in, handed me a gown, handed me stuff to take a shower with, because there was no toilet paper or anything in that bathroom. So I went in the shower, took the shower, got dried off, put my gown back, you know, put another gown back on. I went to go out the door. The door was locked. I started yelling, yo, what's going on? I'm just come out of whatever it was. I know I was dead because it was giving me my last rites. And I started figuring that these other guys were dead. And I started getting really nervous, started pounding on the door, kicking it. And finally one of the guys came in and said, okay, calm down. You can come out now.
And
we're ready.
Apologize. That's all the tape we have that we've been able to find from a 2002 show, Ted Steenworth. He was evidently in a makeshift morgue, and evidently underneath his sheets, his body was full of puncture wounds, looking like somebody had sucked blood out of him or something, and a huge rash. And it took him a long time to recover from that. In fact, he got a medical discharge, I understand. And basically, that's all we know about it. We did talk to Ted off and on for a few years, but he's kind of dropped off the face of the earth. We do know he's back in Georgia, but he's not responded to us personally. So that's where that is. What's happening at Fort Benning? I'm inclined to think all this is MK Ultra mind control. But it could be the real thing. Who knows? Now, we've got something that's a real thing, and it's pretty sad coming up next. I recorded this next part of the show out in the desert of California, Southern California, the Mojave Desert, right by 29 Palms Marine Corps base at a motel. And the fellow that did the recording with me, we call him Mr. X. I later found his real name out, and his widow, and that's right, I said widow, has asked me not to use it, so we won't. We'll leave it the way we did when we did the show. He was an archivist, a clerk at a huge military defense contractor organization in Southern California near Long Beach. And they gave him an assignment. He volunteered for it. And you'll listen to the interview coming up here in a minute. You'll see what was involved there. They put him in this vault with this top secret information, all of the UFO information and related material that this contractor, this defense contractor, had. And I assume, and Mr. X really never made it perfectly clear, but the defense contractor had the contract to file all this top super secret UFO information. And something very sad happened. Mr. X, not too long after doing our show, several months later, got a headache at home one day, about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and it was very severe, and his wife took him to the Long Beach Hospital, and by morning he was dead. I don't know whether there was foul play involved. They did an autopsy, I think. And we've heard other stories about people getting these brain injuries and dying. And is there some sort of weapon that the secret agencies use to knock people off that causes hemorrhaging of the brain? I'm inclined to think so, but I can't prove that. He was a very full of life fellow in his early 40s. And certainly certainly was not a candidate to die, but aneurysms do happen. And so that's where we are on that. I've often wondered whether or not him doing the show with me was any of the reason that he was targeted, if he was targeted. We just don't know. So stay tuned. That'll be coming up, the show in its entirety. It was recorded on location at a motel near 29 Palms, California. That'll be coming up in 60 seconds. Investigator and author Anthony Sanchez.
The name of the book is UFO Highway. I found that although I was diverging into multiple areas of UFO research, I kept finding myself back on the same road. And I found that all these different aspects of ufology were interconnected. So I decided to call the book UFO Highway.
This is the book that could not wait for a regular publisher. It had to be released now. The information is so sensitive, so shocking, so well researched. Colonel X comes from the dark shadows for the light of truth. The inside story of Area 51 and the challenging truth about extraterrestrials. The e-book of the century, now on sale. For information and to order, go to UFOHighway.com.
Welcome to the UFO Files Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
We're out in the middle of the Mojave Desert, in the high desert, and we're meeting with a person who... we cannot tell his name, and we can't give a lot of background about him, but you'll find out why we're talking to this man. Can I call you, do you prefer to be known as Secret Man or Mr. X?
That's what you...
Okay. Welcome to the show, by the way.
Thank you.
What can you tell us, first of all, about your background?
I worked at Southern California Aerospace Company for 11 years.
While you worked there, at one time or another, you were a file clerk?
I was on a project that was filing documents.
And so you had some sort of clearance yourself?
Yes, I did.
And are you still in that business?
No, I'm not.
Okay. You're into something else now.
Yeah, I actually left.
So you actually feel that you can talk about this to a certain extent.
Yeah.
And why don't you tell our audience exactly, you know, we're kind of dancing around here. We need to tell them exactly what we're talking about. What happened there?
Okay. I was in a department that produced documents of some sort for the government, proposals and whatnot, specification documents for spacecraft and satellites. And so we were all cleared, and we were asked to volunteer for a project. We were asked, any of us want to work on a project for 6 or 8 months? And so I said, yeah, I'd like to, and 4 or 5 of us volunteered. To my recollection, 2 of us made it.
So what did they do after you volunteered? You had some sort of test or something?
No, there was no test to it. They just it was
just
kind of a lottery.
Later, they came down who was going to do it, and it involved leaving where you were working at that workplace and going someplace else.
Yes, in near proximity, though, just into another building.
Okay.
And then I worked 8 to 10 hours a day inside a vaulted building, filing government documents.
Now, when you say a vaulted building, it's like a safe, probably.
Yep. It's exactly like that.
And when you were in there, did you have any idea about what you were going to be doing before you got there?
No.
And what was your reaction when you found out what you were doing?
Oh, I was thrilled. I was thrilled because I've been into this my entire life. I always knew there was something more.
Now this dealt with Roswell.
Well, it dealt with not only that, but just government documents in general about EVEs, UFO sightings and reports, and
so from the first day or so, you were involved with actually this far out stuff.
Mm-hmm. And pictures and.
And what kind of was it all just documents you saw, or did you see pictures? Or tell us a little bit about it.
There was a lot of photographs. There was a lot of sealed envelopes, which was too bad for me, but.
Now, in the sealed envelopes, what did you do? Did you make note that they were there or something, or
actually, we got a big bag every day, a bag of work. The security guard brought a bag of work in. He couldn't even look at it. He dropped it off, then locked the door, and we were all in our own little room. We couldn't talk to one another, and we were to open these bags up and file, take out the documents, look at them, depending on what they were. We had special instructions, and it was different every day. It was different every day. We had different stuff every day. And it was like we did this work, but we didn't talk about it. And
there are how many people in this room with you?
There was nobody in my room.
Okay, always by yourself.
Yeah, because it was like this stuff was highly classified. And,
when you got a coffee break or a lunch break, did you go out with the others?
You had to call the front desk and ask, and you couldn't leave. They brought
stuff
in.
Did not get to leave there at all.
They brought stuff in. They had restrooms. They fed us. They did everything for us.
Did they search you every day to find out if you were taking things out?
Most every day, but they told us every day on a daily basis that security was very important.
And you looked at this material, and what was the goal? I mean, why did they hire you to do this?
Why we were filing and dividing stuff up into categories.
And do you remember the categories?
Some days it was divisions of military. Some days it was by classification. Sometimes it was take the documents, take the photos, take all the sealed stuff, take all the, you know, sometimes we had NORAD and it, just all kinds of stuff. It depended on the assignment for that day. Sometimes we got a bag of video cassettes. And
so if I get this correctly, you didn't walk in and the desk was full of stuff. It was in a sack or something you picked up?
No, we came to work, and once we were all there, or once I was there, for me, I would call down and say, okay, I'm here, and they'd bring a bag up, drop it off, and the guard would leave and close the door.
Was it a slot they came through the door, or did he actually come inside and leave it?
He came inside.
Okay,
yeah.
So
it was a huge
I'm trying to just get an overall picture of this.
Yeah, just like someone dropping off their laundry and taking off.
And was the bag sealed?
I had a combination.
And you knew the combination?
Yep.
And the guard did not?
The guard did not.
To my recollection. Yeah,
he didn't
right.
open it when I was...
Right. That would be the logical thing.
Right. He brought it to me closed, and when I returned it, it was empty, and we had boxes.
Do you remember the first thing that just knocked your socks off that you saw?
Photographs.
What was that?
Photographs. I saw several of alien crafts leaving and entering the water with no splash.
Entering and leaving where?
The water. The water.
Coming out of the water.
Mm-hmm.
So all the things we hear about underwater crap and these things are true.
I think so. Well, I saw it with my own eyes. I mean, uh-huh. People ask me if I believe
were
it.
Were these pictures taken by, how do they get the pictures?
Well, they were marked, I don't know who took them.
Uh-huh.
I don't know who took them, probably military, but there were some marked Air Force, some Navy, some NORAD, some NASA, all kinds of stuff. I mean, these particular pictures, I can't tell you what they were marked as.
Yeah. Now, what did they look like? I mean, the craft.
Just black and white, disc-shaped. Not a real close-up picture. Mm-hmm. Maybe on an 8x10, maybe the ship was a couple inches across, which is, I guess, pretty good quality, but it looked just like plain.
Did you see any documents that ever explained where these craft were coming up? From the ocean or water from?
Not to my recollections.
Yes.
I know that it said a few of these pictures were from a Hawaii area.
Mm-hmm.
Out by the Hawaiian Islands.
So that was your first thing that you saw?
That was the first major thing that caught my eye. I mean, there was a lot of boring stuff in this stuff.
Yeah. So most of it probably was more or less technical stuff. It was
mm-hmm.
boring and didn't have a lot to do with anything, as far as you were concerned.
I mean, stuff to do with, a lot of stuff to do with threat to us. to a perceived.
A perceived threat.
Perceived threat. Yeah, I don't think that anybody was a threat.
Do you, why do you say that? Did it say literally this, the you know, warning or?
Yeah, well, you have to understand, I saw documents from the 40s all the way up through the present
right,
time,
right,
which was
right.
The 1980s. Back in the 40s, Foo Fighters were feared. So there was documents about national security and about what we can do, you know, like the big fight.
Do you remember what they said about Foo Fighters?
A lot of stuff about recommended that it's recommended that they fire on them, and that they don't know where they come from, but they assume that it's otherworldly craft, and then other.
Oh, they actually put that in there.
Mm-hmm, and then other documents that say yes, they are other of other worlds. They're not. It's not a speculation. It's now true, and this comes
around. Did they ever explain why they came to that conclusion?
Because of crashes and because of information.
So they had recovered crashes of Foo Fighters?
I think that, well, from the documentation I've seen, my guess would be around 50 crashes. Not just here, but all over the world.
Yeah, yeah. Right. I understand that. You know, my good friend Ryan S. Wood says there were 78 or 76 or something like that, but I get the impression there's a heck of a lot more UFO crashes than that over the years.
Oh, I think so, too. I mean, Bill Ryan was surprised when I said 50, but...
Speaking of Bill Ryan, do you see anything in there about Serpo?
Nothing, no. That's how I got to know him and how I got here, is that mm-hmm. I was on his website, and I was looking at stuff and said, this doesn't jive with what I know. And
right.
Then I got a long email back, and that's kind of the way our relationship started.
Right, right. Okay, well, we're going to get into some of what you do know, because it's incredible. And it's, why are you, you know, you, I guess you had to sign a form, but you wouldn't tell anybody about this, right?
More than one.
And what was the penalty if you did? Did it say?
Not specifically, but I was told on numerous occasions that, penalty for treason is hanging.
So, I've never understood why the government always considered extraterrestrial information treasonous to our government. Did you see some evidence in this documents that is an ET threat?
No. Well, I saw no evidence to that fact.
Well, okay, that's what I mean.
I mean, the fact that their capabilities are more than ours.
Well, that alone would shake up a military mind.
Right, but the fact that they haven't done anything, to me, is plain evidence that they're not a threat.
Well, you know, we're skipping around here a little bit, but I think it's important for the audience to understand exactly what we're talking about. We're talking about at least 5 decades, right, of material.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember the latest item you saw? When did you, can you tell me the year you stopped doing this?
About 84, 85, I think.
Okay.
When it took place.
And when you were working, doing this material, you obviously, you said, well, I'm a file clerk to me before we started, but obviously you had a secret clearance and you had something on the ball. They believed that... you were capable of doing it. I mean, they were giving you some precious secret information for you to file someplace.
Mm-hmm.
And you have any idea what happened to all this material after you filed it?
No. Don't work.
You think it's still in that vault in that building?
It left the room I was in at the end of the day.
Uh-huh.
So, and it was in other boxes and stuff. So,
you have no idea.
Nope.
And it sounds to me like they were guarding this material as much as, you know, Brinks would gold.
Oh, I would.
Probably more.
Well, yeah.
Okay, now let's get back to some of the things you saw. You mentioned the underwater craft,
mm-hmm.
saucer-type craft coming out of the water.
Saw several photos of... a UFO craft taken from Gemini Apollo space shuttle missions, They mentioned...
Was it a saucer craft, too?
Some were saucers, some were just lights, looked like lights. You couldn't see, really, the shape, because obviously it's in space. But, yeah, several hundred of those.
So all of these people talking about, we got these NASA pictures and these satellite pictures and they show things, they probably are onto something. At least you saw some pictures taken by satellite.
Oh, yeah. So a lot closer, a lot more close-up and better detail than what they're showing on the internet that's supposedly this big discovery.
Yeah, can you tell me a little bit about the detail of some of the things you remember? I mean, what do these craft look like?
Most of them were like saucer-shaped or like they looked like cigar-shaped kind of. But then I think that's a side-view deal.
Yeah, it could be just a matter of the perspective.
Yeah, most of what I saw was disc-shaped. I did see spherical items that looked like they were like unmarked, like chrome spheres or glowing spheres pretty close, I'd say within between 100 and 500 feet away from
did the craft have any markings on them?
No.
Okay.
Some of them looked like they had like portholes or windows or
lights at just the general UFO reports.
Yeah, but nothing like where the door hatch would be or anything. I mean,
let's get into some of the other things. You said you saw nothing like Serpo.
No, I did saw no information.
Did
about
you see
that
any
before.
Evidence of any kind of extraterrestrial human being?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I saw pictures.
Relationships.
Uh-huh.
Tell me a little bit about what you stands out.
It's documents about biology, ETE biology, or EBE biology, excuse me.
So were these dead ETs and autopsy reports?
Autopsy documents.
Did you see some of those pictures?
Saw a few pictures, but saw probably read more stuff than saw pictures.
Now, what did they say about the biology of the ETs? Was there more than one type of species?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, several. The most prevalent standing out of my mind are the tall orange beings.
Did you say orange?
Orange.
Okay.
Tall and orange, like 7 to 8 feet, real slim. Slim like a gray, but they kind of have a rounder head, the same type of eyes.
Kind of like a devil, almost.
No, I wouldn't say that.
Or maybe like a luge guy. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Only taller.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Real skinny and slim and tall. And of course, there's the grays with the more.
Did they tell you who they were?
No.
Didn't identify where any of these species were from.
Zeta Reticuli was mentioned.
It
but
was.
Not, but that was for like.
But not, no, but not,
not
with that particular type.
No, no. But what was mentioned was that the orange ones were the fathers and creators of the Greys.
So even the official government documents here are either A, relating the ideas of good and bad and spiritualism and etc. and evil or whatever, or maybe they're just. Were they making those facts or just saying that's what people thought?
Well, some were speculation.
Okay.
Some of them were, there was a few that mentioned mentioned the Greys as claiming to be the creators of humankind and claiming to have brought Jesus to Earth.
Okay.
So there was mention of that in government documents, both in speculation and in what they call knowledge from the ETs themselves.
Did, looking over these documents, and I want to get back to one thing at a time, the orange ones here in a minute, but I have to ask you this. Looking over these documents, was there a lot of evidence to you? Do you have any doubt at all that we didn't just sit down and interrogate ETs? I mean, did that happen? Did they have conversations, in other words?
There was some
sort of an official...
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. I did not see anything on any landing, but I did see about telepathy and actual conversations.
In the conversations we'll get into in a moment, let's get back to the Orange People.
Okay.
Because that's new to me. I had not heard about the Orange People.
Heard it. There's a few people out there that know about it or that are...
Yeah.
It's on the Internet. Some of it's out there.
I guess I've seen there's 38 species or 52 or some ungodly number, but what I'm saying is, and there's probably thousands, really.
I would say so, yeah.
Yeah. Did you get the idea that all of these ETs are working together, or are they separate incidents, separate encounters?
I think they're working alongside of one another, not necessarily together. I think they have different agendas.
What are some of those agendas, you think?
Well, it's common amongst most of them that have been in contact with our government and other governments that they do have a God, and they do believe in God, and that they say their role is to create life throughout the universe. And we're part of that scheme. We're part of that creation.
Okay. So they're basically saying that they're going through the galaxies and the universe, the solar systems, and making sure life exists?
Or creating life and genetically engineering beings where, you know, let's say a society destroys themselves, which is kind of where we headed, sort of, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the reason why they're here.
Did you get the impression that, you talked about them being here for some time? How about abductions? I mean, we did autopsies on them. Were they checking us out? Did you see anything about abductions?
No. It's like I got this certain information.
Uh-huh.
And I was getting
right. I mean, we're not saying that it doesn't exist or is it?
Oh, I think it's true, and I think it does exist. I just don't think that. A lot of people are saying...
I've always thought that, that perhaps our government knew these abductions were happening and we got something in return for it, whatever that is, I don't know.
That's what the word is out about technology, but I don't really think they...
And that's what I wanted to get to.
Agreed. I didn't see too much about that. I really don't think we got much of anything from them. I think we got a bunch of stuff to, figure it out. Because I read about recoveries of machines and that sort of stuff from ships, and I think that stuff was sort of like, some of the stuff I think was given to us as far as crafts and crashes and stuff, I think were set up to deliberately...
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's
why do you think that?
Just because of how everything happened and I don't know, I just got this feeling.
That's a personal hunch from the stuff that I've read. You didn't pick up a document any place that said that.
No, absolutely.
Okay,
that's a personal view.
Well, as far as you could tell from the things you saw, were these all of the complete documents you think that existed at that time?
Oh, absolutely not.
Okay.
No.
This was just... Do you know who this contract was with? Was with the Defense Department?
I have no clue.
Don't ask any questions.
Don't ask anything.
Just do the work. now, let's get back to the other species pictures you saw. These orange ones, by the way, before we go any further, were they posing for a picture?
Some were. A lot of them were.
Oh, really?
Were, yeah.
It's kind of like, hey, stand still, we want to get your official picture here, huh?
Yeah, sort of. Mm-hmm. Like they were just like mugshots type things, or just shots of whole body and pictures of them with grays. And
Could you tell if they were taken under friendly circumstances? Or?
Didn't.
I mean, there weren't any expressions? No. No chains, nothing like that. I always hear about living entities like the J-Rod and other entities, EVE-1 and EVE-2 and all of that. What do you make of all that? You think there's a J-Rod, for instance, forever existed at Los Alamos? Or did you see anything from Los Alamos on that?
I saw pictures and stuff, but it's of pieces of crashes, not of him.
Okay.
Referred to as him. Now, maybe I saw a picture of him and didn't know who it was.
Sure.
Could be.
And how about, did you see anything that you could identify that had been in Area 51 or S4 or whatever you want to call it?
White Sands stuff. And
you mean like the tall whites?
No, I don't ever remember seeing those.
Some okay,
oranges
you
and
didn't see anything like that?
Several species that were like the grays, but were like a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit different.
That seemed to be, other than the human, I guess there were some more or less human.
Nordics, yes.
Yeah, Nordic types.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know where they're from?
Saw pictures of them, no. I have no clue. The only reference to a star system I saw was Eta Reticuli.
Now, when we talk about these things, were there any documents of threats to the U.S. government? I mean, I keep hearing about all the planes that we've lost over the years. Is there any evidence there that planes were shot down by extraterrestrial craft?
I didn't see anything.
Okay.
I think it was just a fear. And it was early on, you know, when the early crashes, when Roswell happened and other crashes in that time, and a lot of sightings. Their concern is over nuclear activity and dirty radiation. I think that's why that was so prevalent in World War II.
Now you're an intelligent guy, so you probably picked up by looking at these documents over the decades that you saw, because you saw early documents and later on, mm-hmm. closer to the 80s where you were even. Did the attitude of the documents change, you know what I mean? In other words, the way they were writing about these, first, what is it? Who are these people? They're a threat. Well, they're okay. Well, we found out. You get what I mean?
More dealing with what do we do to keep this from the people.
Uh-huh. And what do you, was there any document there that said why they want to keep this secret?
Several.
Okay, well, can you tell me some of them?
Well, the first original reasons were national security and threat to human life on Earth. Okay, that was the first tangible thing that I saw. It slowly went to, this is a Christian country, and most people would go into hysteria if they knew what the truth was, if they knew that there were beings out here. As it progressed and the relationship with the government started taking place, then it's like we've dug a hole too big for us to climb out of. And what do we do now? I mean,
so you I mean, it's just amazing they have such incredible secrecy for this decades later.
Yeah, I don't see how they can do it, to tell you the truth.
It seems to me that the American people, the people of the world, really, would probably be shocked for a week or two, then go on about their business. We kind of accept everything, you know?
Well, I think so, too, and I think that I think there's a lot more.
It seems to be much ado about nothing.
Right. There's a lot more people. Well, look at what's infiltrated society with all the alien head suckers and pictures and on the skateboards, and I mean it's part of our culture now almost.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's because it's real, you know, it being real starts in our culture. I really think the younger people would say, oh, that's cool,
yeah,
have them come over to my house, I want to check them out, you know.
Well, I'm not a younger guy, but I'd sure like just knock on the door and say, come over here, let's make
you
a tape.
Let's talk, yeah, exactly. I want to know what's out
yeah,
there.
Let
you,
us, yeah,
you show me your world and I'll show you mine.
Yeah, right. You think we've gone to some other world?
I think circle is true. So, yeah.
You do?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, but you saw no evidence in your...
No.
Okay. How about Roswell?
Absolutely true.
And you saw a lot of documents about Roswell?
And pictures, parts, and yeah.
Give me some examples. We go to Roswell every year. We do lots of shows with Roswell.
Oh,
Peter Jennings said Roswell was a myth.
No.
I don't think so.
Well, no, absolutely
yeah,
not.
Right.
No. Pictures of there was like these frames. This one large picture of all these smaller pictures of a guy taking some flat material and crushing it up into his hands where it was hidden and letting it go and it going bang and springing out and being totally Chrysalis, stuff like that, I-beams with insignias on them.
The strange writing.
Yep, there were also like electronic discs and stuff from crashes that had like video on them.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, there's...
In 1947, that had to blow their mind.
Well, they probably didn't know what it was. I don't know that sort of stuff was from Roswell, but...
Okay.
But it's from other crashes. I would tend to believe it's probably further down the line.
Was there any reason, you know, you were talking about technically superior people here, they got here, or creatures, whatever we want to call them, whatever they want to call us.
Yeah.
Was there any reference in there how they referred to us?
No, that's my recollection.
Okay.
Yeah, no.
I was kind of curious. I guess the official term was just extraterrestrial... beings or
extraterrestrial biological entities,
right.
EBEs,
just the regular, that we have that part of it right then.
Or grays,
yeah,
or they call them by. I mean, there's a mention of people ask me, or Bill asked me, I guess, if I'd seen anything about reptilians, and I said no, nothing in the documentation I looked at,
mm-hmm.
And that seems to be a widely held belief that those exist. Now they could have.
Right, as you said, you didn't have all the documents, probably.
No, I was given
but of the documents you saw, that's what we're zeroing in
exactly.
on here.
And it's a small or large, I don't know how big of a part of it
was
is.
Was there ever any discussion on why these extraterrestrials would crash? Why the UFOs would crash?
Well, there was one where they had figured that the craft was downed by good old-fashioned radar. Good old-fashioned radar.
The really hot radar back in those years.
Yeah. Their technology
was so far. So we more or less
far,
have that story right.
Yeah. It's like their technology was so advanced, they wouldn't think about, you know, they don't use the radio waves.
Do you know if they had any survivors to that crash?
To the Roswell crash?
Yeah.
Yeah, one.
And you saw some evidence of that?
Yeah.
And how severely injured was that creature? I mean, what'd they do with that? Where would you take a creature that's injured, I wonder?
To an army base or some kind of Navy base or something to...
You don't know which
question,
one?
I don't know, no.
Okay.
But I do know they did have one, and he was pretty badly hurt. It wasn't like he could just walk away.
Did he
or she
recover? Or do you know?
No, died like 3 or 4 days later.
And was there any evidence that other, you know, when we lose in the military, you lose somebody, you go after the body if you can get it.
Mm-hmm.
Was there any evidence the ETs do that?
Nope. No, they regard their bodies a little different than we do. Their body's a shell. They're spiritual like we are, but they've... And this is from government documents, from what they have, their communications with us, that their body is a shell, and it's like when they die, they leave their body, and they're conscious of it. They're conscious when they're gone, and they get a new body, and they don't ever forget. They, like, don't die, per se. Where we go have an out-of-body experience or go toward the light or whatever, and we forget where we were, and...
They remember.
They don't ever forget when they die. Yeah, they say we live many lives and choose other lives, and we go out and cruise space for a while and then come back and decide that we want to live again and go inside another body, and we're learning.
Are there two different sexes?
Yes. But they don't really procreate like we do. They just make bodies and recycle biological material.
Well, frankly, that doesn't sound as much fun as the way we do it, but that's beside the point. And we're talking to a man who asked us to help keep his identity secret because he does not want to get into trouble. He is breaking his top secret oath because he believes we need to know what really is going on between the U.S. government and the UFO business. He has seen documents spread out over several decades. We agreed to the terms of this interview by not identifying him and changing his voice because we think this show is important. Coming up in the next half hour, you will hear how the U.S. government has secret documents saying, indeed, the world for many of us will be coming to an end in 2012. Can this be true? Stay tuned. This is indeed tough stuff.
Hello, this is Steve Motley. You know, buffets are very popular these days, so I've decided to create a cyber buffet containing many life-changing products that I would love for you to take a close look at and try. Here on my site, you'll find the very best of the best in all-natural nutritional products that work. Look closely on my site, and you'll also discover some other very interesting products and services, things like video email. And how about a music download service that pays you to share your favorite music with your friends? Do you own a cell phone? Well, you need a AA battery turbocharger. Hey, know anybody that would like to save big money at the gas pump? Well, we have a product to address that concern as well. Okay, if I've piqued your interest at all, here's what I'd like you to do. About halfway down on the left column of this website, you'll see a graphic that says, Steve Motley's Click Here for Help. I promise you, it'll be the very best click-through you've ever done.
Official government documents showing live ETs, extraterrestrials, visitors from other worlds. Is it true? Stay tuned, folks. This is indeed one of our more intriguing UFO Files programs. This is Jerry Pippin. Welcome back to this headline-making show. We're broadcasting from a motel at 29 Palms, California, in the Southern California desert. And our guest is a mystery man. We're not giving his name or showing his face. In fact, we have even altered his voice because he feels he is in trouble, in danger with our own government, because he has broken his oath of secrecy. He made this oath of secrecy to the U.S. government when he examined documents from the U.S. government regarding UFOs and extraterrestrials, beings from other planets, other galaxies, here regularly, and our official government knows about it, and they're not telling you nor me. Now, when we went to the break, by the way, welcome back to the show, you said the extraterrestrials, at least these that you read about, did not reproduce the way we do. We're talking about a sexual way, but more of a spiritual or scientific way by entering a body, a new body prepared for them. Now, this brings up the thing that I'm wondering. I mean, I've heard about male and female ETs before. So the question here really is, are there two different sexes for ETs? Male and female?
Yes. But they don't really procreate like we do. They just make bodies and recycle biological material.
How does that work?
I would imagine they do something in a lab or something.
Then they're probably cloned.
Yeah.
Did you see any evidence of that in the documents?
Quotes and stuff, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Written down documentation.
Do you remember the first time that you saw a document where, I imagine it'd be a military officer, talk to an extraterrestrial?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember where that was?
I remember Air Force on the documents.
Uh-huh.
Air Force. But,
there was a language problem there, wasn't there, or was it all telepathic?
It was mostly telepathic. It was like, yeah, it's like, and they knew they could think to us in English.
Okay. And then when they were in another country, they would think to them in their language?
Yeah, because they know what's going on here.
We don't have, evidence, or maybe we do. That's what I'm going to ask you. Do they prefer certain countries and on the earth? Or,
well,
do different races go different places? I did a story recently with Wendell Stevens in which he talked about a particular extraterrestrial race that he thought preferred Germans, Nazis. And goes back to the Foo Fighter days and before that, and when he was at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in 1947, he threw away a lot of evidence, not by malice, ignorance. He didn't know what it was. He just thought it was strange writing and pitched it. And then later on he figured out there was a German connection. So the Foo Fighters were definitely extraterrestrial, and that's where he was leading his conversation.
Yeah, that's what they used to call them. They don't use that term anymore, obviously, because they thought they were a threat. They thought they were from another country. Germany and Russia. They didn't know where they came from. They thought these were secret weapons.
You can understand some of the things that we did top secret-wise when the Cold War was on and World War II was on. But I'm not so sure that there's any threat like that now. I don't think anybody's going to get on a camel and take an EET. You know what I mean?
We don't have
a threat like that now.
It was done out of ignorance, and it was innocent ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
Innocent ignorance.
What really jumps out at you? I mean, this has been several years back since you saw these documents. What jumps back, if you had an overall message of these documents that you saw, what would it be? That there's nothing to fear?
Nothing to fear from them, but they're concerned about us.
They think we're more dangerous than they are.
We're dangerous to ourselves.
Well, I can't argue with that.
They don't like dirty radiation. There's two real major issues they have with us, and this would be the grace, is that we're gaining the capability to travel interplanetarily and solar systems, between other solar systems. And we're attracted to dirty radiation bombs, engines, whatever it is, not clean radiation. And their fear is that, number one, we're going to destroy ourselves. Number two, that we could take it somewhere else.
Take it and actually cause
damage and pollution somewhere else. And that's...
Well, let's talk a little bit about some particular incidents that you remember. You said they had two sexes, male and female, I imagine.
Yeah, but they don't.
But they don't procreate. They're not dating.
No. Somewhere. I mean, some they are together, but they don't.
Sure.
They're companions.
Right.
But they're not.
Well, they don't have to have.
They don't have to have sex to procreate.
Right.
They can get a new body.
I wonder if they show affection at all. They probably don't have to. They're probably probably just a mental, emotional thing.
Well, they're beings. Even if it's thought affection, I would think
that
would be.
Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. They may have progressed the actual physical part.
Physical, yeah.
You have any idea how they get from huge distances to here? Was there any information in there like, we just don't understand the way they're...
That's pretty much what it was. Talk about bending space and bringing... You don't go there, you bring there here. That sort of stuff where you create a vacuum in distance, a distance vacuum, and you bring whatever you want to get to you. And it's like it's shorter outside the craft than inside. So inside it takes them a while to get here, but outside it's... fast.
Instantaneous.
It's close to it. Not exactly, but close to it. More than minutes to get from here to there, wherever there might be, 40 light years, whatever.
And there's some evidence that some of these craft shot lasers out or light beams or whatever, anything in there like that?
Light beams, never. I've never heard of anything destroying anything.
You never saw anything where a fighter plane was shot down that was attacking them?
No, I've seen them. I've seen documents about disabling the instrumentation in aircrafts and aircrafts crashing, but only because they were chasing. But nothing to destroy. It was just like prevent.
Now, basically, you saw absolutely no evidence of them being a threat to us.
Absolutely not.
Just the other way around.
Correct.
We're trying to shoot them down, which we were at one time.
Right, which we can't.
Right, we figured out we can't. I don't think they even try to do it anymore.
Yeah, no.
And you saw evidence of them working together, maybe not in unison, but they were aware of each other.
Correct.
And would that be kind of like a United Nations of the galaxies or something?
Yeah, I liken it most to the Prime Directive in Star Trek. And so we're not going
to it seems to me that Star Trek is right on about a lot of things.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Do you have any theory about that, how that happened?
I think just beings that make it long enough and evolve enough to realize that we're all the same being. You know, everybody on Earth, there's so many races and all this stuff, but we're all, our souls are the same, and that we need to, like,
I want to get back to the ET biology.
Okay.
Do they have stomachs?
No.
How do they eat?
Their blood is chlorophyll based, so they're a plant animal.
Okay.
They don't eat. They absorb sunlight and use carbon dioxide.
Unless their structure is totally different than ours, they'd have to have some sort of energy.
Yeah, they get minerals and stuff from the atmosphere and from.
They absorb it.
Mm-hmm. Through the skin.
So that nobody sits down and orders a steak.
No.
They must look upon us having to eat three meals a day.
Yeah,
rather quizzically.
The worst part of it is the aftermath, the waste. I mean, it's like a plant has no waste. It has waste. This waste is what we live off of. It's oxygen.
Yeah. So in other words, they don't have bowel movements or anything like that.
No, not that I. I'm aware of. Their esophagus goes down to a point, and that's
and
it.
Do some of them actually have voices, you think?
Yeah, I would think so.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot about that, a lot about thought communication.
What's your feeling right now? You think there's ETs among us talking to some colonel or general right now someplace?
I think so. I think different kinds, a lot of different kinds, and I think in other nations, too.
Do you think any presidents ever met a E.T.?
I would say Truman and Eisenhower, probably. I don't think anybody else.
You didn't see any documents to that effect, though?
No, but I would...
You didn't see the famous Edwards Air Force document where Ike went there and met him on the runway or anything?
No.
Did you see anything like that? Anything that they were going to have a meeting or a treaty or an agreement or...
Just stuff about acquired equipment. Acquired equipment.
Required equipment.
Acquired equipment.
Okay. In other words, what we found in crashes.
Right, figure this out. Or what's given to us. Here, take this.
And, of course, you worked for an aerospace company, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that may be in all the material they were giving you guys, because that's what you'd be interested in, your company.
Could be that just that's the documents that I happen to see. Or that were passed across my desk to be filed.
Yeah, you know, it's been an incredible time, and it's mind-boggling when we start talking about it. And I know you've thought about it for a long time now.
Yeah.
Over and over and over. What conclusions do you draw here? I mean, there's life on other worlds. They have. We agree to that. Right?
Absolutely.
And as far as you know, they're not into physically threatening us. They're not eating us for lunch.
No, they're coming here, though. A lot of them are coming here and visiting.
And why don't you think they want an official notice that they're here?
That's coming. It's coming within 5 or 6 years. Because there was mention of 2012 and visitations.
And did it say what this visitation would consist of?
That they would make themselves known to the human race through landing and through our massive communication network. And that if there was nuclear war before that time, that they could possibly intervene.
Before, in other words, if we didn't wait till 2012, because we're going to blow ourselves up, they would intervene.
Yes.
Now, I've done a lot of shows about UFO intervention with missiles.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people that were on duty when these things happened.
Yeah, and they shut them down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you see anything like that?
All documents of that effect.
You
yes.
did see documents of that.
Disabling nuclear missiles and shutting off hundreds of silos. And
so basically, you really feel, after seeing these documents, that probably they're not going to let us destroy ourselves.
I think they're going to let a lot of us die, but not all of us.
And why would they let some of us die, you think?
Well, you're really not dying, number one.
Okay.
The bodies are being destroyed. The souls are still alive. So
they have souls, and we have souls.
Correct.
Do these souls intermingle?
Upon death, yeah.
Okay.
We can go up to one of them. I don't know that you can tell the difference.
Okay, then.
That's just personal opinion.
Yeah, I understand that.
Okay.
And you did see documents, official U.S. government documents, that dealt with this subject.
Yes, dealt with the recycling of bodies and this whole thing about not dying and not understanding physical pain, because they don't have physical pain. You can cut their arm and it's like, okay.
Oh, they don't have any pain?
No.
And there were documents to that effect, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Be pretty tough to defeat them in a war, then, wouldn't it?
There's no winner.
Well, do you think some people in our government think they can?
Yeah. I think some people in our government think they can control humanity and keep things the way they are here.
And you, when this thing about 2012, and was that date given?
Mm-hmm.
It actually was given.
December 21st or 22nd.
What we talked about.
Same old date. Everybody
yeah, right,
talked
right,
about
okay.
the Mayan
calendar.
It's
coming back,
whole,
right,
yep.
right. Now, who's coming? Did it say a group of them or just one group, or did it go into detail?
The Greys were what talked about this, so I would imagine it's probably them. Because they say that they put us here and there.
So we're really... As far as the Greys are concerned, we're kind of their stepchildren.
Yeah. No, we're their children. they're concerned about us. They care about us. And, you know, we're part of we're a project for them. We're part of the life that they put on. And there are other beings like us on other planets throughout the universe.
Other human, homo
like
sapien
type. Yeah, sort of. I mean, not exactly, but, mm-hmm. you know, maybe has a different color skin, but... In the same evolutionary process,
and as far as you know, you didn't see anything about Serpo, but you think there's truth to it.
Yeah, I think that I don't know. There's so much the detail in it. It's not really what I'm concerned about. It's the whole concept. And yes, I do think so. I mean, there's so many things out there, like the mention of close encounters of the third kind. There's a movie I saw when I was young, and this was before I was working in aerospace, that to me is pretty close to the truth, and that's Hangar 18.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've ever seen that movie. It's cheesy. It's about it's like a parallel to the Roswell crash, but it's about a space shuttle that launches a satellite, it hits a UFO, and it crashes to Earth.
We're talking with, I think I'll give you the title, Mr. X. That's okay. We haven't talked about cattle mutilations because we've been talking about the goodness of the extraterrestrial movement, and you've been pretty explicit about it, and you have documentation to back it up. But how do you explain that part of it?
The cattle
did they deal at all in cattle mutilation? See any documents about that?
I saw documents about that, but never anything that would mark them as sinister and. From the ETs, and they wondered what it was, and there were sightings, UFO sightings around those times. So I think there's a correlation there, but I don't think there was anything.
Did they write about Bigfoot?
No.
Okay, no Bigfoot.
No Loch Ness type stuff. none of that.
Yeah, right. No monsters and no reptilians.
No reptilians. Not come across my desk.
I've often felt that not only in the Christian religion, but in many religions, especially the things that were written 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years ago, that there could have been an extraterrestrial element to it, and the mankind at that point just wouldn't understand it. Did the extraterrestrials, you said earlier, they did believe in a divine God?
Yes.
Did they believe in a singular Godhead?
Yes.
And did they call him God? Or did they call it a force?
We referred to what they believed in as God, G-O-D, but no mention of what they called him or it or what that
was. In other words, as far as they were concerned, it might be as simple as what we saw in some of the movies, May the Force Be With You.
Or it could have been their collective consciousness as a set of souls.
And they really dealt in reincarnation. They really believe in that.
They manufactured bodies, so yeah, they kind of just... They
manufactured what? Now, what did they manufacture?
They manufactured bodies to use when they needed them, when their bodies worn out.
So you're saying there's a factory in the sky someplace where... I say, hey, Joe, we got 1,000 souls today coming about. We need bodies?
Well, no. The biological entities themselves had their own laboratory and made their own bodies. Their quote was, we recycle bodies.
In other words, they chose who they were going to be next?
Yeah, they were pretty much all the same. There was no...
Eternal or lasting life with them is not a mystery, it's a fact.
Right.
How long do these bodies they have right now last, did they say?
300 to 400 years.
And do they go check into a hospice or someplace?
I'm not sure how they do it.
I wonder how they do that.
Just walk into a lab and...
You think it's that fast,
huh? EBE, out-of-body experience, an OBE, and...
Well, is there any evidence of the Greys or androids? You hear about that a lot.
No.
You think they're entities, huh?
Yeah. Oh, I know they are.
All of them.
Yeah. Well... What I learned.
What you saw.
Yeah, I didn't see
saw.
Anything about any kind of androids or part machine or.
Well, I mean, now we said some fairly earth-shaking things to people. That you know, I've been doing shows like this for 4 decades, and you saw all these secret documents. So it may not be earth-shaking to you or me, but the normal person out there, we pretty well, you know. Skirted heresy here. What do you say to those people?
Well, there's a lot more happening than you realize.
and
the world isn't always what you see and what you're taught. Just be careful who you listen to and, you know.
Do you have any evidence where they voluntarily come and stay? Like, you know, we hear about the story. I did a show recently with the Avery. Mm-hmm. In which they talked about EBE3 being a female ambassador and being in a safe house near Washington, D.C. And they tried to make contact with her, and they weren't able to do it, but they almost did. But Reagan, according to their story, did see the EBE3, the female ambassador. Do you see anything like that in these documents? Yours were more just crash.
Crash and
well, you did have some interrogations, though.
Mm-hmm. So, but not more just the informational type and reports, and this is what we think, and this is what we know, and more this is what we think.
You never saw in any of these documents where a crash extraterrestrial that we recovered, or one that we met, or captured, or that came willingly, or ever how it happened, where they said something like, according to the Geneva Convention, I don't have to tell you anything. You know, they were cooperative, in other words.
To a certain extent. I think they told us what we could handle.
You know, I mean, they gave more than their name, rank, and serial.
Right, they're dealing with the government. They're not dealing with a normal person that might be more open-minded, and they're dealing with somebody whose mindset is protect and,
sure.
and protect, control, and own, and... you know.
But as far as you could see from the relationships, the little bit of stuff you saw about relationships, it more or less was a cooperative effort. There was not any animosity.
No.
On either side.
No. Not at all. In fact, when we recovered their bodies after the crashes, it wasn't, they didn't ever come back to get them. They could care less.
They didn't
know. They didn't have anything when they had the bodies, according to the EBEs were like, so you have a body, I'll just get a new one. It's no big deal.
So how did they look at our, you know, our attitude is, you know, we've got to recoup that body. So.
Yeah, they don't see it like we do. That's why I think a lot of people don't understand, because they look at it on terms of human, and I mean, it's hard to look past that because that's what we are. They don't look at it as, you know, it's possible that other people could have other values.
If I get what you were saying here, on 2012, December 20th, 21st, whatever the date is, there's going to be a lot of ships land. CNN or some, all the television networks will be broadcasting it. We'll all know about it. And it is basically, we're here. Is that the way they plan to do it?
Yeah, and we'll be given a choice.
And the choice is what?
I would think that if we want to learn where we came from and to learn to evolve more spiritually so we too can go throughout the universe and make light.
Well, you know, many, many governments and some religions will not accept that. They will say, yeah, they're telling you that, but what they're wanting to do is make you their slaves. They're controlling your life.
Yeah, I think that the government will say, this is our Christian nation, and they're Satan, and it'll be that whole thing, that whole duality where you choose us or them, you know.
It appears to me that our government is not doing us a favor by keeping us in the dark.
Correct. I agree. 100%.
And it does appear to me that I'm getting more information these days from official sources, not high up, but higher up than before.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's almost like part of the government wants us to know.
Yeah.
They feel like you do.
I think it's slowly coming out, I think.
And 2012 doesn't look very... it might be wonderful for a lot of people. A lot of people might say, hey, this is a rapture, you know.
They come at
us, and other people will say, hey, they're coming to get us, and other people will be saying, I mean, I just see it a very confusing time.
I would think so, too, see. Yeah, and it's because of how we're taught, you know. If we're taught devout Christianity or if you're taught any other religion, it's all looked at differently. It's all looked at differently.
Do you see anything on... your documents you did about the moon, us going to the moon and never going back, did they act like they had bases up there or anything?
No, I didn't see anything, no.
Okay. So basically, we've got about 3 or 4 more minutes here, and I'm not going to put words in your mouth. I want you to kind of sum these things up yourself, too, but it seems to me that when you really get down to it, the government probably doesn't know a whole lot more than we do. Or do you think they know a lot more and they just don't want to tell us?
I think they know more and they don't want to tell us. I don't know if it's a lot more. I think there's enough information out there and enough people.
And what do you think that is? That they know the races of the extraterrestrials and where they're from? Is that what we're talking about?
We know that, and the capabilities, I think, is more. And that we could have these capabilities too. And they have a lot of technology. The government has a lot of technology and a lot of... There's, like, we don't need oil right now. There'd be no reason for us to use oil. We have plenty of secret projects that have technology way beyond that. It's about money.
Did you ever see any documents on what the energy the extraterrestrials used? Was it a zero plus energy base something, or...?
Not that I can remember.
Okay.
Not that I can remember. Just that it's not like anything we have. I mean,
well, it's good to hear we don't need gasoline at 325 and 335 a gallon out here in the desert.
Because people want money, you know. I think that
it seems to me that maybe the evil should be spread about a little bit more than just the government wanting to keep it secret. Maybe there's a lot of corporate interest here, too.
Oh, I think so. I think it's all tied together.
Well, what do you think the answer is going to be? We only got 6 years, if your prediction's right.
Well, yeah, the answer is going to be, well, that's what I think the big problem is going to be, all the turmoil when people are given the opportunity to learn who they really are and where they came from. And
now, on the worst-case scenario, you see huge amounts of death.
Yeah, mass hysteria, absolutely.
You see this Earth being shrunk from 6.5 billion maybe to the neocons seem a half a billion.
Yeah, half to one, I think.
So that may happen.
And different parts of the world would be differently affected. I think countries like India, where they're more spiritual and less, where the religions are more spiritual and less controlling, I think they'll fare better.
So the disaster will be controlled, in other words, in your mind. The Earth is probably a fairly good prize, and the ETs won't let us destroy that.
No.
But we might destroy each other.
Yeah, if we destroy each other, they'll probably just put more beings on the Earth. Probably different ones.
Really? Did you see any discussions about that? The Greys seem to think that we're their creation, one way or the other, and
yeah.
I don't want to get into the technical part of it over religion and who created who, but they think that they had a big part in it.
Yeah, we're a cross between, they're the missing link.
And did they have documents say, hey, we made a mistake, we should have done something else here?
No, because it's all part of the plan. I think if we're not evolved enough to take care of ourselves and survive, then we destroy ourselves and they find someplace else or some other being to cross with them to make something else.
So in summary, you've seen documents where the extraterrestrials exist.
Yes.
And lots of saucers and other craft. And you haven't seen any evidence of any combat.
No. Just us shooting at them or pursuing them, but nothing shooting back.
And you haven't seen any evidence that they're going to destroy us, but they may let us do a part of the job.
Yeah.
Well, what's the message? What can we do about it?
I don't think there's a whole heck of a lot we can do about it. It's just
tighten your seatbelts and go for the ride.
Yeah, and if there's more people with information, come out and talk. I think that it's imperative that people that are in the know tell the truth.
I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me.
It was a pleasure.
Okay, thank you. You have been listening to another installment of our Insider Disclosure Series. By the way, if you are an insider and you want to go public, simply contact us at jerry@jerrypippin.com. We've been on location for this show in the Southern California high desert, and our on-location producer has been Roberta Scott. Production music was selected by James Wortley, and post-production was by Rick Trotman. Until next time, this is Jerry Pippin, thanking you for listening, and cheers. By the way, that still goes. If you are an insider and you have some information, contact us at jerry@jerrypippin.com. We'll make every effort to protect you. And like I say, we don't know that Mr. X met foul play. It could have been just a natural aneurysm, but he passed away in 2008. We're going to do another Insider show next, a portion of an interview we did, I think, in 2007, maybe 2005. And this is with Dr. Bruce McAbee, and we were doing a series on the Avery.
the bird calls, all of the people in the Avery Secret UFO organization, they each had bird names. And we'll talk to Dr. McAbee about some of the things that I think you'll find interesting. We don't have time for the entire interview. This is just an edited version of it. But you can find it on our website at jerrypippin.com. Click on the UFO files and go over to the Insider Disclosure panel. And you'll find several interviews there about the Avery and other secret organizations. Dr. Bruce McAbee coming up next as we continue looking at the inside story of the UFO phenomenon and exactly what involvement does the U.S. government have. Don't go away.
Go beyond the obvious and make Roswell, New Mexico, your brave new destination for fun and intrigue. Learn the truth about Roswell's history and see why Roswell's the mother of extraterrestrial connections. Whether you're looking for UFOs and aliens, cultural attractions, outdoor recreation, or even chewy mozzarella, there's plenty to uncover about this uncommon Roswell, New Mexico place. To find out more information on the mysteries of Roswell, visit www.roswellmysteries.com. Roswell, New Mexico. Visitors, welcome.
Dr. McAbee, how are you today?
I am fine, thank you.
So, basically, you've been investigating UFO-related material for some time.
Well, yeah, since the late 60s when I got involved with the original NICAP. There's a new NICAP. It's basically an online National Investigating Committee on Aerial Phenomena that's been started, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago. The original one started in 1957 and lasted until about 1980. And it was while I was going to school to get a PhD in physics and going to American University in Washington, D.C., and I heard a lecture at the university in the middle 1960s by two guys who worked at NICAP. And I thought that was pretty interesting. And then I said to myself, well, you know, if anybody has the answers to the UFOs, probably these guys do. And it just so happened their office was in Washington, D.C. Well, NICAP was an organization that you could read about in books. It had been around long enough and had been sufficiently public that you could read newspaper stories or, you know, as I said, it appeared in books and so on. So I knew the name NICAP and what it stood for and how they had done research, and I went down to Washington, D.C., assuming to find a great big office there, you know, with lots of secretaries running around and file cabinets and scientists and all sorts of stuff. And
so it was a pretty big operation.
What I assumed it was.
Yeah.
Because, as I said, it was in all the books that, you know, that I had read on the subject. So I went down there, I guess, in 1968 to the office, 1536 Connecticut Avenue.
Good address.
But it's absolutely nothing left of what there was back when I was there.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a row houses that probably dated back into the 40s or 50s. And 1536 was a doorway leading up to some stairs that led up to a hallway that was lit by a single light bulb at the top. And I knocked on the door, and it opened to a small room, a hallway-like, that was crammed with all sorts of books and stuff piled in, and a little old broken-down secretary lady who was in her, Isabel Davis, must have been in her 60s, I guess, at the time. And all the people you had heard about, like Major Kehoe, who was the guy who started it off, they had basically departed by the time I got there. His desk was there, but I never saw him there. I did meet Kehoe some years later at a UFO conference. I never saw him at the NICAP office. Never saw Dick Hall at the NICAP office.
Basically, it was just a secretary, huh?
It was basically just a secretary. And these people, I think it was Don Berliner and Dick Hall, who had actually spoken at American University some months earlier. They weren't there when I got there, but they said that NICAP needed volunteer help, so I could see why. And one of the first things that Isabel wanted me to do was to write up a one-page fact sheet on UFOs. I still have a copy of it somewhere. Here I was, a new kid on the block, more or less. I had read some books on the subject, and she wanted me to be writing something that she said she gets letters all the time saying, send me all the information you have on UFOs. And, of course, she couldn't send all. The correct answer to that would be send a truck.
Yes.
So instead, she wanted to have a one-pager that she could send out, you know, that had a lot of stuff, and she typed it up in small print, and sure enough, that was sent out I don't know how many times. But that's how I got my feet wet in the subject. And then where the rubber meets the road is actually going out and talking to witnesses. The NICAP had these subcommittees spread throughout the United States at the time, and the subcommittees guys were the people who actually did the investigations. And the Washington, D.C. subcommittee was an active organization of, I don't know, a dozen people, I guess. And as a result of that, I went with them on some UFO investigations. It turned out that the people who were witnesses weren't the town drunks. They seemed to be normal, level-headed, credible, whatever you want. The first witness I investigated was a school teacher, and her husband was an accountant. She took us along the road where she had seen green lights passing over outside, not far outside of Washington, D.C., and you had to say, well, there's no reason for green lights to be passing overhead in this area where she was driving. So we don't know what it was, an unsolved story, but at least, as I said, at least she had some credibility. A year or so later, I mean, I did another investigation. The first one that I ever wrote up involved a elected state official in Mount Jackson, Virginia, and a sighting of an object that he said was hovering over the top of a mountain for quite a distant period of time, and he watched it while he was driving home over a distance of a dozen miles or so, and after he got home, he sighted it with respect to nearby wires, and looked at it with binoculars, and was able to draw a picture of it, and essentially my investigation lasted well over a year, because the first time I talked to him, I had him draw a picture, and collected all the information and the maps and all that sort of stuff that he gave me showing where I was. And next time I saw him, a year or so later, I went back, as it were, to take him a copy of the report. But I said, before I do give you the report, could you draw that for me again? And he sat down and he made three attempts. Each attempt was close. The third one was, of course, almost identical to what he had drawn for me a year or so beforehand. And I figured, well, if he was making this all up, he's got one heck of a good memory.
Yeah, that's right. And so had pretty good evidence.
The thing that was he said that the shape was like a rocket. He was looking eastward when the sun was to the west. This was an evening. The sun was behind him. He's looking to the east, so he's got optimum viewing. It looked to him like there was a football shape or a rocket shape. It wasn't moving any at all. It had not, and what had caught his attention was that he was driving over a period of many minutes, this thing seemed to be maintaining a fixed position several thousand feet above the top of a mountain, which was already 3,000 or 4,000 feet high.
Mm-hmm.
And when he got to his house and he looked at it, he brought his family out. They looked at it. Everybody looked at it. He looked at it with binoculars. This thing, he said, was stationary. It wasn't moving at all, as far as he could tell. And it had this weird shape. So he looked at it a number of times, and as the sun went down and it got dark, he wasn't able to see it, and it wasn't there the next morning. But that report was one of the credible things to begin my UFO life with, I guess. A lot of people, I gather that a number of people who get interested in this subject are unfortunate, shall we say, to have their first cases turn out to be very weak or zeros. Assume, that must be what this all is.
Yeah.
And that result is they either lose interest or they become rabid debunkers.
You've been in this for a while, and that's the reason I brought that out in the conversation, because what's getting your attention these days in the UFO field? What interests you?
Well, I have, over recent years been writing up stuff that I've done in the past. I'm putting things onto my website. Like back before Christmas, I put a case on that happened in 1981, which I call the Case of the Flying Christmas Tree. It's a photographic case that involves a number of slide photos, two groups of witnesses a couple of miles apart, seeing this collection of lighted objects moving over the sky. This was happening east of Hartford, Connecticut, in a wooded area or a rural area, I guess you could say, where there's sizable distances, half a mile to a mile between houses, typically. Anyway, this series of photographs taken by one of the witnesses shows these clusters of lights, and one of the clusters of lights is a sort of a triangular shape, a collection of red and white dots, which, and the first person to see this, a lady, said when she first saw this thing, it looked like a bunch of white dots to her, and her first thought was that somebody had put a Christmas tree up. She was looking off at a slant angle in a little sort of a hilly area, and she was looking through trees to see these lights when they first appeared. She thought it was kind of strange that they didn't seem to be moving, and her first thought was that somebody put up a Christmas tree in that direction. He got a camera, and they took pictures of what appear to be three objects that went traveling eastward, not directly over, but near their house.
So her husband came out with the camera. I mean, so he was a witness.
Right, he was a witness, and he got a series of, I don't know, 8 or 9 or 10 pictures. And this stuff is all on the website. I was a witness at Gulf Breeze, however.
Well, were you?
Remember the Gulf Breeze?
Sure, down in Florida.
There are two basic phases to that. From November 1987 through July of 1988 was the phase of sightings that everybody remembers for their pictures taken by Ed Walters. But after 1988, there were sightings continued into the early 1990s, and in particular from November 1990 through July of 1992, they were characterized by this reddish light thing that would travel through the sky and then turn white, bright white, flash rapidly, and there were witnesses, people down there who went out virtually every night. this is in Gulf Breeze, Florida, not far from Pensacola. They went out virtually every night except the bad nights in February and March when it really got cold. But anyway, they went out many nights between November 1990 and July of 1992. They recorded, documented about 170 events during that period of time. It was so frequent that people traveled to Gulf Breeze just to see the Gulf Breeze UFO, and many of them were rewarded. That included some newsmen, news organizations that went there. At first it was a single light or maybe a couple of lights that was moving through the sky, but then in September of 1991, it turned into, they started seeing rings of light appear. And at that point, I decided I would go down there and find out what was going on, if I could. And the first, I was told that, see, I got there on a Friday night. I was told that they had a sighting the night before. Didn't have a sighting the night I was there, the first night. But then the second night, sure enough, this thing appeared. And I saw it myself. And made a tape recording of myself describing what I was looking at. There were some other people there, and somebody suddenly yelled, "There it is!" And I just happened to be facing towards the city of Gulf Breeze itself, and I just looked up into the sky, not knowing where to look. And I saw this little bright light up there, which had not been there before. This was looking into a hazy sky lit by ground lights, and so they're sort of like... And with binoculars, you could look through the haze and see the stars up there. But
Do you have that recording still?
I probably do have the recording of myself somewhere. It's all recorded in a...
On a cassette?
The script of what I said.
Yeah.
I didn't bother to call the guys in white coats with butterfly nests to come and take me away because there were 30 other people there. It was videotaped and photographed. And we did a crude triangulation of it. It was several thousand feet away. Could well have been 10 or 20 feet in diameter. It was 8 lights forming an octagonal ring. it was pretty weird. And it just sort of seemed to move. I don't know if it was moving upwards or moving horizontally. I didn't see it when it was first observed. It was seconds, a couple of seconds, from the first person who yelled, "There it is," to when I saw it. And I was trying to do some get some instruments going at the time when it disappeared, so I didn't actually see it fade out, but it did. It moved a bit and was gone.
No noise, I guess.
No noise. As a matter of fact, that was one of the things I was doing. I had what's called a big ear long-distance hearing aid device, which you used to be able to get from Edmunds Scientific Corporation, something that would pick up, you know, somebody whispering at a distance of 100 feet or something like that.
Mm.
And I had this pointed at the object, didn't hear a thing.
When do you make a Gulf Breeze? That seems to be a big mystery. They were there.
Part of it that involved Ed and his photos. You got to understand that there were a dozen or so other people who saw the, who said they saw the same thing, including the county coroner and his wife, claimed they saw the same thing in July of 1988 that Ed had seen in November, December, and January, and February of 1987 and 88.
Yeah, I mean, these things seem to go, come and stay for a while, then they go and they never come back.
Yeah, they,
And for the life of me, I can't figure out why.
It was sort of like the center of UFO sightings from the spring of 88 on through, oh, the summer, the late spring and early summer of 92. And they still had a few sightings. Even Ed had some sightings going up into the middle 90s. I think Ed's last sighting that I know of that Ed reported was 97, I think. And other people were having a few, but, you know, it's basically dropped back down to, whereas it had gotten into the hundreds per year for a while. It's, I guess, back down to a few per year, sort of like a normal area.
There doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason about these. I guess I would call them hot spots. They happen everywhere.
Yeah, we don't know, or at least I don't know, although I can conjecture. Well, there's been a question of, well, why do we see them at all? If they've got cloaking techniques or something, you know, why do we see them at all? It may be that they intentionally appear to sort of radicalize the population, you might say, or get us accustomed to their existence. And why they might appear in particular areas, particular times, all we know is that Ed was an abductee, and there were several others in the area at the same time. My conjecture is that we may see them either on purpose or by accident, but they're in an area to, for whatever reason, to interact with the some number of human beings in that area, and we.
So it is
abduction.
Yeah, abduction related, in your opinion.
All right. It's a byproduct of abduction.
Mm-hmm. A good way to phrase it. We only have a couple of minutes left here, but what do you make of
abduction?
Yes. I was going to get you're reading my mind.
Well, of course, that's the big hot thing right now. First of all, I would expect that if somebody were to say, yeah, there was a group of people that was taken on board a flying saucer and went to another planet and lived for a while, that they would come back with extremely bizarre stories. On the other hand, all we have are anonymous reports, so far as I know. I mean, there's some evidence that, you know, something like this may have happened. Certainly, Robert Collins, in his book *Exempt from Disclosure*, builds an argument for the background for this: that their saucers have landed, there have been direct interactions with human beings, and so on, and therefore it's possible that they have taken some group of people elsewhere. So I would expect, if it were true, that things would be pretty bizarre. And if you read through the Serpo stuff, yeah, things are bizarre, but they're also things which are technically questionable or just plain wrong with the reports. I was one of the first people to criticize the reports for saying things that sort of don't obey astronomical laws.
Uh-huh.
They claim that this planet is around one of the stars of Zeta Reticuli, although now we've heard that there's another planet, Alpha Centauri, involved. But the claim that the original Serpo or whatever was that around one of the stars of Zeta Reticuli, those two stars are 6/10 of a light year apart or something, huge distance.
Mm-hmm.
And
they wouldn't look like what he described.
Well, they talk about orbiting two suns, and there's no way you could do that based on what they're talking about, an orbital period, a year of...
Well, perhaps...
I don't know. I forget all the technical details, but the right. point is that it doesn't seem to check out.
Well, perhaps they changed the names and places to protect the innocent, you know.
The names and places of the planet?
Yes. Yeah, well, that's a good way for us to end the show. We'll be checking your website regularly. You're updating it quite often now.
Yes. And you can check to see what happened with the year of the UFO.
Okay.
That's a good history right there.
Certainly sounds like it. And Dr. McAbee, appreciate it.
I'm happy to be here, and thanks for the invitation.
And we'll be talking again soon.
Tales of High Strangeness. Jerry Pippin's Parazone. Check out our stories of the horrific, the interesting, the spiritual, on the paranormal pages of JerryPippin.com.